Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. How is everybody doing today? Happy Halloween. Can you guys believe that we are already at the end of October and November is going to start in just a couple of days? So crazy. But I hope that even with this crazy times with the pandemic and COVID, that everybody has a safe and happy Halloween. Please be safe out there. Social distance, wear your mask, wash your hands, and just have fun, but safely, please. To be honest, Halloween is not really my favorite holiday. Might be just because scary movies scare me. I'm always the one when we're watching a scary movie, like peeking through my fingers, just because I'm so scared of watching the monster or the serial killer, and you know I don't like to see all the blood and gory details. So Halloween is not my favorite holiday, even though I do like to dress up and all that and hand out candy to the kids and stuff, but not my favorite holiday. But despite that, I do like to, you know, get together with my family and watch scary movies, even though I don't like horror movies. But Halloween got me thinking, you know, about the disability community and in horror movies or in psychological thrillers or suspense movie. And, you know, there's not really a lot of representation of individuals with disability in horror movies. You know, we have very few characters with disability. If you look back to all these famous horror movies like Psycho or Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Friday the 13th or even Nightmare on Earth Street, and then recently with Bird Box and A Quiet Place, we do see some type of disability in the movies, even though the characters may not be the protagonist. But if you really pay attention to the movies and you look at it, they do have some disabled characters in them. You just have to really, like I said, pay attention, because disabled characters in horror movies are often portrayed in few ways. Number one is they're portrayed as the monster. So if you have a facial deformity, or if you scar, or if you're burned, then you are perceived by the audience as the monster. So you're made to be the monster. The other, you know, most common way that disabled characters are portrayed in horror movies are the helpless victim. So those individuals who are unable to protect and defend themselves simply because they have some sort of disability, maybe they're in a wheelchair or they're blind or deaf or mentally, they have a mental disability. But you can also see in horror movies how disabled characters are portrayed being mentally unstable, or in recent movies, you can also see how they're portrayed as the empowered victim. So they're the heroes of the story. Even, you know, when they're being chased by monster or a serial killer, they're still the heroes. Start with the category of monster. If we look at the movie Freaks by Todd Browning in 1932, is one of the earliest movies, horror movies, to feature disabilities. The movie revolves around a circus freak show, and the freaks are actual human oddities or persons with disabilities. So in the movie, Hans, one of the circus dwarfs, falls in love with the beautiful trapeze artist Cleopatra. But it turns out that she is pretending to be in love with him because he is wealthy. He has a lot of money. So she pretends to be in love with him even though she's in a secret relationship with the circus swamp man because she wants to kill him and take all his money. Eventually, at their wedding, Cleopatra shows her true colors after the freaks tell her that she's part of them now. She's one of them, and that she's part of the group. So she freaks out and starts, she just starts to mock them and says that she's not one of them and that they're monster and that they're freaks. And later in the movie, the freaks, they plot revenge against her for what she did to Hanks and for what she said about them because she humiliated them. So they plot revenge and they end up in the end of, removing her tongue and then cutting her legs and deforming her hands. So they turn her into an actual freak just like them. So this movie, this movie at the time was very controversial. Many people that felt that the movie was too grotesque and felt that they were exploiting the disabled actors. But I feel that in reality, this movie portrayed the reality of how society perceived individuals with disabilities. Back then, they really did think that people with disability belong in a circus or in an exhibition hall to be mocked and laughed and just humiliated just because they were different, which is not right. And another thing that I think the movie really showcases is that that inverts the audience expectations. The audience was obviously expecting that the freaks were going to be the monsters and really freaks, that they were going to be the bad guys, the bad people. But in reality, it was the beautiful, the ordinary, the normal, like Cleopatra and the strong man who turned out to be horrible people. They were horrifying because of their behavior and how they acted. And then the audience was, compelled to feel respect and sympathy and affection for the freaks. So that was a difference in a horror movie. And then if we look at the 1939, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, we can also see that because Quasimodo had a facial deformity and a curvature in his spine, he was seen as by the townspeople as the monster, simply because he looked different and because he didn't look like everybody else. He was portrayed as the monster. He was mocked. He was humiliated. He was shunned. And we can say the same thing as we look at the movie Frankenstein, where crazy scientist digs up corpses, with his assistant to assemble a human being and, made up of other people, body parts, dead body parts. And in Frankenstein, you can see that Frankenstein is also made to seem as to look like the monster just because he looked different. He was chained up and locked up in a dungeon because they didn't think that he was fit to be in society. And then the villagers, they tried to kill him, and they eventually did do kill him. But in reality, we really take a look at Frankenstein. He's only killing and attacking people in self-defense because they're antagonizing him. He's not actually a monster, even though his brain came from a criminal. His behavior at times is very childlike, like a kid. And I feel that if we take a look like a Frankenstein, it's a good representation of how society often perceives individuals with disabilities, especially those who have facial deformities or scarring or they have their faces burned. They're seen as something that needs to be kept away from society, something that needs to be it is ugly just because they look different. When in reality, you know, that doesn't make them a monster. But that is how horror movies often portrays individuals with disability. In my next segment, I'm going to talk about mental illness in horror movies. So stay tuned on Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Why do we vote? We vote because it's important to exercise our right to vote. We vote on issues that matter to us, such as healthcare, education, the economy, civil rights, and immigration. With our votes, we have the power to shape our country and our communities. Your vote matters.
Yeah!
So please, register to vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome back to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. Welcome back. We are talking about disability representation in horror movies, psycho thrillers, suspense movie, scary movie, whatever you want to call it. In my last segment, we spoke about how disabled individuals are often portrayed to be the monsters in horror movies. But mental illness is also a favorite topic of horror movies. In horror movie, psychosis often equals evil. You know, we often see the mentally unstable as being the villain in the horror movies. If we look at the movie Psycho, it is a classic example of mental illness in a horror movie. So in the 1960s psychological horror thriller, it centers on Norman Bates, a seemingly shy motel owner. In the movie, when a woman, Marion, who just recently stole money from her boss, stops at the Bates Motel for the night without realizing that she was going to be in danger because Bates, you know, Norman Bates looked like an innocent man. But we all know the famous shower scene. Even if we haven't seen the whole movie, everybody knows that. You know, that scene freaks me out every time I hear the ee-ee-ee-ee sound. But in the movie, when Marion is taking a shower, a shadowy figure appears and, you know, comes into the bathroom and stabs her to death. Obviously, in the movie, the viewer is made to believe that Norman's mother, who's supposedly in the hotel, is the one responsible for Marion's killing and also responsible for the killings of other people around town. But in reality, is, you know, for those of you who have seen the movie, sorry if I'm spoiling, in reality, it turns out that Norman Bates suffers from split personality disorder, and he would be the one killing people. He would dress as his mother and kill people without any conscious thought that he was doing it. So that's one way that horror movies use mental illness to be seen as, you know, evil and as, you know, a reason for being a serial killer. If we look again in the movie Misery, in the 1990 movie Misery, which is a psycho thriller with Kathy Bates, where she plays an obsessive fan who holds hostage her favorite novelist, played by James Caan. The movie, the famous romance novelist Paul has a car accident on his way home from Colorado to New York. So in the middle of a blizzard, he has a car accident and he loses consciousness, and Kathy Bates, or her character Annie, finds him and takes him to her remote home. So, you know, when he wakes up, he's bedridden, with two broken legs and a dislocated shoulder. And, you know, she tells him that she's his number one fan, and that she's gonna take care of him because she's a nurse. But, you know, slowly she begins to unravel after reading Paul's latest novel, in which the main character dies. So after reading that, she starts to, you know, unravel. She locks Paul up in the room. You know, she forces Paul to write another novel where the character doesn't die. And then when he tries to escape, she breaks both of his ankles with a sledgehammer. So, ouch. You know, eventually Paul is able to kill Annie and escape. But as we look at that movie and everything that she does, you know, Annie's mental illness, because it's clear that she has a mental illness, is what makes her into an evil person, you know. It's what makes her be capable of kidnapping and of inflicting pain on someone else. So in that respect, directors and writers, you know, they use mental illness to be seen as a, you know, as something evil. If you look at a very famous movie, you know, Michael Myers of Nightmare on, of Halloween, I meant to say. Sorry, I'm getting all my bad guys confused. So if we look at Michael Myers on Halloween, Michael Myers was committed to a mental institution when he was a child after killing his sister. And then obviously eventually he escapes. And, you know, terrorizes his whole family and the whole town, which is not good, Michael. But if you clearly see the movie, you know, if you look past the killing and the blood, we can see that Michael Myers has schizophrenia and, you know, psychosis, and he's also a little sociopath. But he has mental illness, which I guess we can say that's what led him to, you know, kill people for no reason at all, but just to kill. But, you know, what I'm trying to say is that horror movies, you know, they often, you know, they demonize those with mental and behavioral health challenges, you know, by making people with mental illness, you know, appear threatening and dangerous to everyone, to society. But they are portraying mental illness through violence. Even though people with mental illness or mental health problems are statistically not more violent than the average person, you know, but even though they are not more violent than the average person, that is one way that individuals who have a mental disability are portrayed in movies. You know, oftentimes these movies, they take someone's mental illness and, you know, they take advantage of that to make them seem like the bad guy, you know. They make them the villain, the serial killer, the one that is, you know, out there killing everybody and is dangerous to society and threatening. But in reality, that's not the truth. But that's just one way of how the disability community is represented in horror movies. In my next segment, I'm going to talk about how horror movies represent individuals with disability as the helpless victim. So stay tuned for more. I'm Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio. Carbon emissions represent man's greatest controllable contribution to global warming. If you like to breathe crisp, healthful air, think about this. For every mile driven, 1 pound of carbon particulate matter is released into our atmosphere. Before you jump into your car, next time, ask yourself if you can make the trip on your bike instead. And keep it clean.
This is Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. In today's show, in preparation for Halloween, we are discussing the disability representation in horror movies or in psycho thrillers. We have already spoken about how individuals with disabilities are portrayed as the monster, as mentally unstable, and in this segment, we're going to talk about how individuals with disability in movies, in scary movies, are often portrayed as the helpless victim. So they are portrayed as individuals who the audience must feel bad for because, oh my God, they have a disability. They can't protect themselves. But we can. In actuality, we can protect ourselves. In both Way Until Dawn, which was a 1967 movie, and Don't Breathe, a 2016 movie, the main characters are blind individuals who have to defend themselves from danger. So in the psycho thriller Way Until Dawn, 1967, Audrey Hepburn plays Susie, a blind woman who is the victim of a con game by three men who are in search of drugs and money. So in the movie, at first, the three men try to trick Susie by posing as different people. So because she's blind, they pretend to be different people to trick her and confuse her, to win her trust. But, you know, eventually Susie realizes the truth that, you know, she's being tricked and that they are criminals. And she decides, obviously, to defend herself by using her disability to her advantage. So when the three men, are in the house, it's nighttime, she breaks all the bulbs, you know, all the light bulbs in the house. So she leaves them completely in the dark, just like she is. And, you know, because she's already used to relying to her other senses, and because she knows her own house, she's able to defend herself and to defeat the criminals. But what did she do? She used her disability, you know, her blindness, to her advantage. She made the criminals, you know, come down to experience what she has lived with her whole life, which is really cool, right? Because they thought she was going to be an easy prey just because she was blind. But no. And then as we look at the movie, the 2016 movie Don't Breathe, three thieves break into the house of a wealthy blind man, thinking, again, that he'll be an easy target. You know, that's going to be an easy heist. But, you know, they're wrong. They underestimate the blind man, who at the end turns out to be more dangerous than they are. So I'll break down the movie a little bit. So the three of thieves, who are named Rocky, Alex, and Money, you know, they learned that the blind man, Norman, is a war veteran who has $300,000 in settlement after his daughter died in a car accident. So that's how they found out that he has money. They found out that he has money, and then they spy on him. So they spy on the house, and they realize that he's blind. So one night, they drug his dog, and they enter the house. And then they put a, in his room, they put a sleeping gas bottle to put him to sleep. And they begin to search the entire house for the body. but they're unable to find the money. What they do find is that he has a locked door that leads to the basement. Eventually, Norman, the blind guy, wakes up because of the noises in the house, and probably because the sleeping gas bottle wasn't enough for him. So he wakes up, and this begins cat and mouse game between the teeth and hen. Eventually, he kills two of the burglars. So he kills Alex and Money. But then when in the movie, when they eventually are able to open the basement door where they think the money is, they find in the basement a woman who is tied up and who is chained. And this is the woman who killed Norman's daughter when in the car accident. So because she was found innocent, he decided to lock her up in his basement and do some pretty bad things to her. So yeah, the blind guy turned out to be more dangerous than the audience and the thief thought that he was going to be. And it's interesting and kind of funny that, you know, that in both movies, the main characters, which were blind, were underestimated, you know? The criminals thought that they would be easy targets because of their blindness, because of their disability. But instead, the victims, you know, they used their own, the blindness, you know, their disability to their advantage. They forced their captors to experience the darkness that they experience on a daily basis. You know, in both movies, in Way Into the Dark, Susie or Audrey Hepburn breaks all the light bulbs, and then in Don't Breathe, again the wolf, the blind man also turns off all the light in the house, so the burglars aren't able to see. So you know they're at the same level. They force their, like I said, their captors to experience the same darkness as them. They know how to use the darkness to help them defeat the criminals because, you know, they know how to get around in the darkness. Of course, you know, in Don't Breathe, the victim actually turned out to be a criminal and more dangerous than the thieves and the audience expected him to be. But that's besides the point. The point is that he was able to use his blindness, you know, to defend himself, to protect himself. See the same portrayal of individuals with disability in the 2016 movie Hush, where a deaf-mute woman is forced to fight for her life when a masked stalker breaks into her house. So again, in this movie, she's not blind, but she's deaf and she's mute, and she's forced to fight for her life, you know, to defend herself. And she uses, again, you know, her disability to her advantage, because all three movies, we can see how the criminals or the people who break into their house, they think that it's going to be an easy target and that the individuals with disability are at a disadvantage because of their disability. But in reality, you know, that's not the case. And, you know, all these psycho horror thrillers, you know, these movies, they make the audience, you know, feel sympathy for the helpless disabled victims. You know, they make the audience feel bad for them. But then at the end, you know, the viewers are completely shocked when they're able to defend themselves and to defeat the criminals and the bad guys. And also they gain respect because these individuals have the courage to defend themselves. And this is simply because society doesn't expect someone with a disability to be able to protect themselves. But that's not true. We can use our own disability, towards our advantage. So I think that's a cool way that horror movies are portraying individuals with disability, and I hope that we get to see a lot more of that representation in movies in general. You've been listening to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Why do we vote? We vote because it's important to exercise our right to vote. We vote on issues that matter to us, such as healthcare, education, the economy, civil rights, and immigration. With our vote, we have the power to shape our country and our communities. Your vote matters.
Yeah!
So please, register to vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome back to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare. In this episode, we have been talking about the disability community and horror movies and how that they are portrayed as the monster, the mentally unstable, the helpless, undermined victim. But now we're going to be talking about how in some horror movies, individuals with disabilities are the ultimate heroes. In some movies, in some psycho thrillers and horror movies, an individual's wheelchair or prosthetic becomes their greatest weapon to defend themselves from monsters and serial killers. In the 1985 Silver Bullet, a horror movie with a preteen paraplegic Marty, who is the one who realizes that a werewolf is the one behind the town's mysterious killings. Having been gifted a custom-built wheelchair, a motorcycle, it looks like a motorcycle, nicknamed Silver Bullet, Marty sets out along with his sister to defeat the werewolf. He uses his wheelchair, motorcycle, to not only outrun the wolf, but also to defend himself. So the wheelchair allows Marty to be able to protect and defend himself from the werewolf. And then in the movie Alien Resurrection in 1997, it's another example of a disabled character, Don, uses his wheelchair to his advantage to defend himself against aliens. So hidden in his wheelchair, Don has a collapsible shotgun, which comes in handy, obviously, when the aliens attack him, because he's able to just take it out of his wheelchair and start shooting to protect himself. Unlike wheelchair user Franklin on the 1974 Texas Chain Massacre, who was, portrayed as an annoying character that was often, left behind by his companion and who sadly died when he was sawed down by the serial killer. Marty and Don, they use their wheelchairs to their advantage. Their wheelchair doesn't hinder them. In the contrary, it is instead a tool for their survival. So in this case, their disability doesn't hinder their survival. It actually helps them to survive and to protect themselves and others. And then as we look at the movie, the horror comedy Planet Terror, which was a 2007 movie with Ross McGowan. The movie is centers around a group of people who are attempting to survive zombies and a military unit who is following in and is behind them. So in the movie Planet Terror, the main character is a go-go dancer called Sherry Darling, and who loses her leg after being attacked by one of the zombies, and he kind of, you know, tears her leg out. But then the funny thing about this movie is it's ridiculous. I haven't seen the movie. I just read about it. But just reading about it just made me laugh, because I guess when she's in the hospital, her ex-boyfriend, Ed Reed, shows up to rescue her from the hospital, and she tells him, I only have a leg, and he breaks off a table and puts one of the wooden legs of the table into her limb to, you know, create a prosthetic for her, and he's like, here, now you have a leg. So Sherry uses her wooden leg to protect herself and defend herself from zombie and from, the soldiers. And then when her wooden leg gets broken in one of the many fights, again, Air Raid replaces her wooden leg with an M4 assault rifle with a grenade launcher. So she uses her M4 assault rifle prosthetic leg to defend herself and those around her, you know, those in the group. So she's, throughout the movie, she's kicking ass, shooting everybody and flying off and launching grenades towards the zombies and the bad guys. And it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's a ridiculous movie, because when have you seen someone with, you know, an amputee with a assault rifle as a prosthetic? But if you guys have the chance to look it up and watch it, please do, because I think I'm going to do it just so I can laugh, because it sounds ridiculous, but that's what it is. So anyway, I got off topic. Although this disabled people, you know, these individuals have a disability, they use their wheelchairs and their prosthetic to defend themselves and to protect those around them, you know. They don't let their wheelchair and their prosthetic hinder them. They don't let their blindness, and their deaf or their mental disability to stop, you know, to enable them to defend themselves against danger. And, you know, I feel that although disabled people will probably still be portrayed as, you know, the monster or the helpless victim, I feel that movies like Silver Bullet, Don't Breathe, Hush, A Quiet Place, and even Bird Box, they have exemplified the changing narrative that is, you know, surrounding the disability, and they have also embraced creative portrayals of human diversity. You know, they have proven that disabilities can be perceived as tools for survival rather than used as a societal burden. So I feel that in that sense, those movies have shown that even disabled characters, they're worth making them, you know, not only just the main characters, but that they're worth living. You know, they don't have to just be, you know, the character that gets killed right away just because they have a disability. We watched the movie Friday the 13th, Friday the 13th Part 2. One of the characters who was in a wheelchair just gets killed used randomly. He's outside, and Jason throws a knife to his head, and he rolls down a hill, and that's it. You know, there was no, he didn't defend himself. There was no struggle. Nope, he was just outside, and he was randomly killed. So I think all these movies, like I said, Silver Bullet, Hush, Don't Breathe, A Quiet Place, they show that, and even Way Until Dark, they show that individuals with disability, you know, we are able to use our disabilities to our advantage to defend ourselves, because it's true that they are tools for survival. They're not a burden to us. And I hope that in the future, that we can see more of these representations of individuals with disability in horror movies. But in movies in general, I hope that we are able to see more blind characters, deaf characters, or even characters who have a wheelchair or prosthetic who is just as cool as Cherry Darling in Planet Terror, you know, which is a assault rifle. And even if that's crazy, it's still cool to see someone with disability with such a cool technological prosthetic, because if you think about technology nowadays, prosthetics are becoming so much modern, and they kind of do look like some, like a robot, you know, like something very modern and sci-fi. So I hope that we get to see these different types of representation in horror movies and not just the representation of disabled individuals as monsters and as helpless victims, because we are more than that. And most of all, I just want to wish all of you a happy and safe Halloween. Please social distance, wash your hands, and you know, wear your mask, and just have fun and enjoy it. And happy Halloween. You've been listening to Rarely Disabled on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Rare.